Hi, Tom.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi. Thanks for calling back.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. So, hey, if you're ready, we can get right down to it.
Sure.
All right. Let's start with your year of graduation, including if it was like spring or fall, and your major.
Sure. I graduated in 2006 in May, so after the spring semester. I was a music business major with a focus in entrepreneurship.
So that was like the entrepreneur track, they call it, correct?
Correct.
Excellent. And what was your principal instrument?
Trombone.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Might be
a little unique from all the guitarists and singers.
I was going to say, can't remember if you're my first or second trombonist. Not many of you.
Yeah. I think there were about 20 of us when I was there, so.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, hey, we'll get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
Yeah, so currently I work for myself, which sounds like not a glamorous thing, but it's good. I'm a product design consultant. So what that means is I basically design anything with a screen, how it looks, how it works, who it's built for, that kind of stuff. So mobile apps, websites, I've even done some projects for the interface for treadmills and other kind of hardware like that. Make use of Photoshop or even just a sketch pad to design how it all kind of works and is put together.
So in other words, I imagine there's a lot of knowledge, expertise, knowing about what's going to work well for people and what isn't, because anyone can make a picture, right? But there's some real expertise there. But essentially, you make an image, and then you send it off, and somebody else writes all the code.
Yeah, in an oversimplistic manner, sure. It depends on the scenario. Sometimes I'm actually writing code as well, because there's all kinds of different types of code. But in general, I'm the one creating the pictures and kind of cutting out the individual assets to be used in the code for someone else to write.
Gotcha. And just really quickly, how long have you been working independently?
So working independently for the past 2 years. I left my last company, Runkeeper, in the end of 2014.
Okay, so this is like, it's a real thing. Sometimes people consult in between jobs, but sounds like this really is your thing then.
Yeah, this is a real thing. I'm starting to build out the team to more than just myself and hope to grow it into something that is doing design and development across the board. I've also launched a product lately. There's a bunch of things going on, but yes.
Do you currently have employees, or is it more like associates who you do the product design, they write the code?
Yeah, so I have some contractors that I work with, depending on the project. Typically, it's mostly me. Sometimes I'll bring in other people who have more specialized skill sets for the project we're working on, whether it's in research or specifically visual design or stuff like that. There's all kinds of different types of design, which maybe we'll get into later. But I don't touch too much of the code part yet, but on my own project, I launched a product recently and had some contractors that wrote the code for that. So,
gotcha. Do you mind giving a brief description of what that product is that you launched?
Yeah. So the consulting name that I do product design under is Brilliant by Design. I launched a product just simply called Brilliant, and it's a research tool for mobile apps specifically. So mobile app developers would integrate my software into their app and use it to survey their customers at various moments in the experience. And long term, it'll be kind of broad, any type of survey stuff, but the initial focus is just on a specific type of survey called Net Promoter Score, or NPS, which is just a quick kind of one or two question survey that's been used for probably 20 or 30 years. That's really simple and really impactful. So,
gotcha. Interesting. So, hey, I'm a little bit curious. I'm sure you're going to tell us it varies. But, like, I mean, how big is the typical? This sounds like you do the job, you design the product right, done, moving on to the next. Like, how big are these projects in terms of, like, time or even, like, what's your typical rate? Like, is it, like, 5,000 a pop, 50,000, 500? Can you give just a general sense of the scale of these projects?
For consulting?
Yeah, for being a consultant.
Yeah, so the scale of compensation varies for sure, depending on the project, people's, you know, what they actually want to do. You know, I think it could, I bill by week, so it could be anywhere from, I'd say I've gone as low as maybe 3,000 a week to 6,000 a week. You know, that's obviously going to vary for the person. I've been kind of blessed to be able to have worked in this field for 10 years or so, and built up a lot of experience with, you know, managing design teams and doing a kind of all aspects and going from the fourth employee to a company to, you know, up to 50 employees. And I've got a lot of experience in there. So, I think I can command a higher rate, but, the product design consulting market right now is pretty hot. It's something that a lot of people need, and there's a big need for, and there's money out there to be made. So,
and how many weeks is a typical project?
It completely varies there as well, some of them are as quick as maybe a couple weeks, 1 or 2 weeks. Some other clients I've kind of had ongoing. I had one that was probably almost every week for about a year, I think a year ago. That was Cybex. That was the fitness equipment, treadmill, arc trainer company. It's broken up into shorter kind of projects, I guess I'll say. Like, you know, they'll contract me for 4 weeks, and then we get to the end of that 4 weeks, and then we'd up it again for another six or something like that.
Sure.
Ultimately, it was kind of the entire year I was working with them. But there might have been random weeks off and stuff like that here and there.
Okay, and so it sounds like when you are working on a project, that's pretty much your sole focus.
Yeah, again, it depends. sometimes people know they don't need me full time, so I'll still bill by the week just because it's cleaner and easier. But maybe I'll be billing for 30 hours that week or 20 hours that week or something like that.
Sure.
Just, you know, make it sure it's known up front that my hours might not always be typically 9 to 5. I've never had a client be upset with that. So it allows me the freedom to make sure I'm around for any meetings or phone calls or anything with those clients that I need to take. But I also have the freedom to, you know, work from home or run some errands or go to the dog park with my dogs or that kind of stuff.
Understood. One quick question. About how many hours do you work per week? And actually, can we separate that into billable hours and total hours?
Sure. I can probably give you a thumb in the air answer.
Yeah, that's fine.
Again, it varies. consulting is just like that. One thing I'd recommend if you are a consultant is just kind of like only make use of maybe half your income at any given point, because you might have down times where you don't have any jobs, and you don't want to kind of roll through expecting a certain amount of income and then hit a dry patch and not have anything. I've had those weeks. I've actually had like an entire month where I didn't have any jobs at the time, where I just spent a lot of time reading, learning, meeting with people, kind of working on some side design projects, which aren't really billable hours, but, you know, I'd say I would make solid use of my week. I tend to be a workaholic. So, you know, I'd say that the down weeks for me are still at least maybe 20 or 30 hours.
Sure.
A typical week is probably, I'd say 40 billable hours and maybe 50 total hours, you know, including another 10 hours and maybe researching stuff or, you know, practicing some other stuff. I always try and do some deliberate practice on, things I'm not good at, research stuff, visual design, stuff like that.
Right. You have to constantly stay on top of things.
Yeah. I mean, Yes and no. I'm certainly always reading different perspectives on things. And you kind of mentioned a little bit back about the product kind of having it be a set it and forget it and move on kind of thing. Product design is never really that. It's kind of like a song or a work of art. It's something that's never going to be finished and can always be improved. And you have to find that sweet spot of making sure you push it out the door. But there's always things to be learned. There's always new ways of doing things. There's always something you think you know how to design and people react completely differently. And it's constantly evolving in a learning experience. So there's definitely stuff to always be learning. But just quickly, that I have had weeks where I'm actually triple booked where, I mean, again, because it's consulting and because you never know when you're going to get the work. If I think I can do it, sometimes I'll take on a ton of work and really just work, you know, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed all week. I don't like to do that very often, but if I think I can do it and it's going to be good income, then I'll definitely do it.
And just speaking of income as a consultant, like, you pay your own Social Security.
Correct.
Taxes. And of course, hey, you know, you work for another company, they give you a certain number of vacation days. I guess you could take as many vacation days as you want, but you don't get paid.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, there's good and bad about consulting. Good, it's great money. I mean, just going off the numbers I told you earlier about how much I make per week, if you can book up your entire year with that kind of income, you're doing pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
But with that does come, you know, you have to pay your own taxes. You have to do that kind of math. I definitely recommend getting an accountant. I was the kind of person who always did my own taxes and always took care of that stuff with TurboTax. But doing this stuff definitely created more of a headache, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing anything incorrectly. Even with that, I didn't even know I had to pay quarterly taxes as a business and stuff like that. There's all these little things. You have to pay your taxes, which normally gets taken out of your paycheck for you from a real job. There's healthcare and stuff like that. If you want to put away for 401ks, stuff like that. Like I said, I would go off of half of whatever you make at any given moment, because that other half is probably going to go to all that stuff. And that's why you can command such a high price, I guess I'll say, as a consultant, because you have to factor in paying for all that stuff yourself, whereas at another job, they're kind of paying some of that for you.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So, hey, let's zoom in now. Let's assume we're on one of your standard, quote, on weeks. Not the insane ones, and not the ones where you're, you know, doing a little reading in your own project. But a typical on week, like, can we zoom in, look at, like, what's your typical day look like? Oh, and by the way, do you work at home or do you have an office?
A little of both. So some days I work from home. I live in the burbs now, so my basement is basically my office. I have a ton of music gear around here too, which I never get to use as much as I'd like. But I work from home some days, and I also have an office at a place called WeWork, which is basically a whole office building of individual offices of all sizes that you rent out per month.
Cool. But yeah, okay, let's zoom in. You can choose which one of those it is, and kind of just, can you take us through your typical day?
Sure. So I just kind of started a new routine this year, so I'll go over that. I have a tough time self-motivating sometimes, and one of the things I started this year was scheduling all of my time, or as much of my time as I possibly can. I typically was someone who just kind of woke up whenever I wanted and did work whenever I could and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I started to feel like that wasn't really as efficient as I'd like it to be. So I kind of set out a schedule every day that I try and follow, which I don't follow, I guess, as religiously as I should, but it's helped structurally. So my typical day or my ideal day, I'll say, is I get up at 5, kind of get dressed and stuff, come downstairs to my basement where I have an arc trainer. I do a workout while watching Game of Thrones. I'm just actually getting into Game of Thrones.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I'm up on it. I won't spoil it for you.
I avoided it for a long time, but it's a good motivation. I try and make it so that I don't watch it unless I'm working out. So it's a good motivation to work out. So do that for about an hour. Make my breakfast, which is usually some kind of shake, with fruit and all kinds of other stuff. Take a shower, get dressed. I'm ready to go roughly by 7 o'clock. If I'm staying home, I just come downstairs and start reading. But if I'm going to the city, that's when I kind of go to the train station and get on the train and go into the city. Listen to an audiobook on the train that way. Try and get a decent amount of reading done, probably about an hour before I actually start working. I
And
then
is the reading typically more general product design stuff, or is it directly related to whatever job you're on now?
Sure. So there's two types of reading I try to do at all times. I have audiobooks and paper books, depending on the scenario I'm in. And I try and keep audiobooks to more autobiographical, kind of interesting story stuff. So a biography on Ulysses S. Grant, or I'll be starting a book soon called *Sapiens*, which is just about the evolution of humankind. Stuff like that. And then the actual paper books are more, I guess, product design focused, business focused.
Gotcha.
So that way I can go between, when I'm driving, I listen to audiobooks. I can't listen to a paper book, you know?
Nice.
I can't, it's not easy to go from like, oh, I read to this point in the audiobook and I'll pick it up in the paper book later. Or I read from this point in the paper book and then pick it up in the audiobook later. It's just too difficult to do. And, I'm not really an iPad person, which I guess maybe would make it easier.
No, totally cool. It can make sense to separate the formats like that.
Yeah, that's it. It makes it easier to jump between the two and not confuse them, instead of saying like, oh, did you know Edison was, a general in the army? Like, nope, that doesn't work. Two autobiographies at the same time, you're just going to mix up the data. So, I try to keep them separate like that.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's say you're going to get to the office. You've made it into your office.
Yep. So if I can, I try and do the next 2 hours of what I call deliberate practice, which is basically focusing on the areas that I think I need to focus on that I'm not good at. And that could be work related, that could be anything related, that could be music related, that could be, anything really. It's just a way to try and improve my overall skill set as much as I can. And I will say it's usually typically work related. It's usually like I'll design a screen for one of the apps I use. And I'll kind of redesign it and see if I can improve it, using Photoshop or Sketch or those kinds of things. Because one of the areas I'm actually not great at is the Photoshop stuff. The really pretty interfaces. I could be better there. So that's one of the areas that I typically work in. But sometimes it's writing up scripts for interviews with potential customers, or working on emailing people for sales opportunities, like trying to get people to be clients or those kinds of things. It's just 2 hours of practicing, essentially. That's an area I'm not always great at. That's my ideal scenario at that time. After that, it's all kinds of client work or working on the product I built, if there isn't client work to be had. So, that could be anything. That could be whatever the client needs me to do for the next maybe 5 or 6 hours.
And that typically is like, I mean, working on these designs you do, right? So
So, I'll broaden up the scope a little bit on the design stuff. So the design, there's a whole bunch of different roles inside of the term design. So, roughly there's six that I break down. There's product design, which is kind of the generalist, which is kind of what I am. But it's more of a high level overall, like what is this product? Who is it for? Are we building the right thing? That kind of stuff. There's an interaction designer who is how it works. So these people are working in prototypes or even just like black and white images that kind of roughly show where a button goes or, you know, what text is where, that kind of stuff, just to try and highlight how the thing is supposed to work, which screens go where, that kind of stuff. There's a visual designer who does a lot of the really pretty stuff, basically takes what the work the interaction designer did and puts the veneer on it and makes it look real pretty and fit in with the, you know, branding and the color schemes and stuff of whatever he's using it. There is a front-end designer, or front-end developer, I should say, which is kind of writing the code for turning these pictures into real working things. Mm-hmm. There is a voice designer, which is all about how the copy is written. Is it serious? Is it funny? Is it more feminine, masculine, that kind of stuff?
The text. Got it.
Yeah, like if the app is going to talk to you or the website's going to talk to you, what tone of voice is it using?
Gotcha.
Is it, if it's like OS X, it's going to be very like technical, here's your error message kind of stuff, as opposed to maybe Skype where there's a lot of like bubbles and cute sayings and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then the last one's user research, which is the people who talk to users, send out surveys, gather whatever research they can to understand who the user is, what their problems are, if we're solving them correctly, that kind of stuff. So my typical day with any client could be any one of those roles, because I'm a generalist at this moment. Mm-hmm. Typically it's mostly in the interaction and visual design, basically trying to design how something should work, and how it should look at the same time.
Gotcha. So, all right, so you're working on that, typically you said 5 or 6 hours.
Yep. Depending on if there's a natural stopping point, that time varies. So it could be a little earlier. It could be after that. After that, I'll take a train home. Somewhere in there, I get lunch. You know,
of
that's,
course.
I guess, an obvious thing. But after that, I take the train home, head back to my house, spend some time with my wife and dogs. So try and make sure I come in the door and spend some quality time with them, wrestling around with my dogs, have dinner with my wife.
Yeah, I mean, is your work day done at that point, or are you back to emailing clients or doing other
things? It depends. So typically, I'll try to make it done at that point. Mm-hmm. But I do have some time built into my evening that could be used for work, depending on the client needs. So if there's a meeting the next day or something, or a deliverable I need to have by the next day that's not done yet, I absolutely will, after I spend that quality time, go back down and start working again. I try to do more reading at night and kind of leave some nights more free for me to play music or do something else, to not overload myself with work. The only caveat to that is that I do still also work on the weekends, which is how I end up getting to my 40-hour a week.
Gotcha.
Or week. I'm kind of a work all around person.
Gotcha. A little less on more days.
Correct.
For what it's worth, I do that too.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, it's, I try to follow the schedule, but really the schedule is, has to adhere to whatever other requirements are around it. So if there's a really big thing I have to get done in 2 days or something, I'm probably cutting out the reading and cutting out the deliberate practice and doing all that work, because I know I need to spend all that time working. That's where I typically try and focus.
Awesome. Well, hey, to qualify for these interviews, one of the criteria is that you enjoy what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So I see, I could hear you, sounds like you're, sound like a pretty happy guy, and certainly sounds like, the money in and of itself sounds quite good.
Sure.
But I'd love to hear you articulate a little more, what is it about your work that you enjoy?
So, good question. It took me a long time to get to this place, but one of the things I realized that I really enjoy doing is creating something that is useful to other people. you know, a number of people, a number of artists, you know, create art for their own reasons and, you know, do their own thing. It's an expression of themselves and that kind of stuff. Product design is decidedly not that. It's kind of the opposite of that. You can bring your own personal flair to things, but really the deciding factor is, will the end user actually use it? Is it creating value for them? That kind of stuff. And even in the product designer trade, there are plenty of people who really like diving in on a specific product. So like when I worked at a company, like Runkeeper was the last company I worked on, everyone there really liked diving in to the Runkeeper product, understanding who the runners were, what they were looking to solve, that kind of stuff, which is absolutely a lot of fun as well. When I started consulting, it was a little bit more of a means to an end. I did it because I needed to make money and it seemed like an easy thing to do. And I thought I'd hate it. And what I came to realize was that it wasn't so much about the specific product that I worked on. It was about being able to create something in whatever market it is to be useful to an end user. So, you know, with Cybex, I'm making it easier for people to run their interval workouts while running on a treadmill, or switching over to a different product. There was a recruiting company called Happy that I designed things for that was helping people find better jobs and not have to go through as much hassles for interviews. Or there was a healthcare company I worked with called Patient Ping that was helping make sure that people were getting better healthcare and making sure the follow-up messages and stuff were attributed appropriately. And they were, you know, all their care team was getting the right information about them and stuff like that. And what makes my day great is knowing that I'm working on products that are, for better or for worse, making the world a better place. I just like being able to jump around and have work that I actually do have a real impact to a real person instead of just kind of roughly doing something that is having some impact somewhere, maybe.
Well, awesome. Awesome. Okay, hey, let's take it back to 2006.
All right.
Because there you are. Feel free either. It can be graduation day, or if you want to take it back before then, you can. But I'm guessing, you know, as your Berkeley education was, you know, winding down, you weren't thinking product design consultant.
Nope.
So, hey.
Not at all. I wasn't thinking anything, honestly.
I was going to say, so, yeah, put us, like, in your headspace at the time, and then we'll kind of go through your career. Where you were at, like, one step at a time that took you from there to where you are now.
Yeah, so I'll actually go a little further back. I wasn't even planning on going to college. I was determined to be a rock star. And my father was like, well, it's not that I don't believe you can't do that. It's just I think it would be smart if you got the paper. So I said, okay, I'll go to Berkeley. Why not? I went to Berkeley. I originally wanted to be music production and engineering.
You'd think a rock star would be performance.
You'd think, although I thought, I still think a performance degree isn't worth it, at least for me. But, yeah.
It's cool. No judgment.
Well, especially with a trombone focus there. Like, I played trombone at Berkeley, but I play all kinds of other instruments. I was in a rock band at the time and stuff like that. So, weird path for me, but
okay, so you said MP&E.
Yeah, I wanted to be music production engineering. I took some of the intro courses and really didn't do that well in them, and I was also taking some intro to music business courses simply because I thought it was logical. If I was going to be in a music career, I should probably take some classes in music business to better understand it. Mm-hmm. And was acing all of them. So, you know, it kind of came around time to apply for the MP&E major, and I thought to myself, you know, someone's trying to send me a sign here. I'm doing really well in music business, but I'm not doing so well in music production and engineering, so maybe I should make my focus music business. So I did that. Mm-hmm. Naturally, for whatever reason, I kind of graduated to entrepreneurship, or not graduated, gravitated. I'm not really sure why. It's not like I'd always wanted to be an entrepreneur, at least, you know, explicitly. It just seemed like the most interesting path, I guess. And it was coming up on graduation, and I really hadn't put much thought into, like, what I was going to do. I had held full-time jobs the entire time through Berkeley, just working as a supervisor at the Gap or at Best Buy, or I was serving tables at a restaurant called Dick's Last Resort. My dad describes me like water. He's like, if there's a way to get there, you're gonna find it. That's kind of my mentality. It was just like, hadn't put much thought into like real career or anything. I was gonna find a job and do my thing. So a company came and talked to one of our classes. The company was called Nimbit, and they were kind of a web service that allowed individual musicians to manage their careers. And it seemed interesting. I had not really thought much about, tech startups or any of those kinds of things. I was involved in technology and had done some graphic design on the side and stuff like that, but hadn't really thought about that as a career path or anything. So I asked the guy who presented the class, "Do you have any openings? I'm going to be graduating soon. Would love to work with you guys." And he said they had a graphic design internship. So I'd done some album art for bands I was in and kind of stumbled my way through that over the years. So I said, "Sure, like I can do that. I'll send you my portfolio. We'll see what happens." So they liked what they saw. They brought me in for a 2-day-a-week internship, and really, all that was me saying I knew how to do things I didn't know how to do.
No, I'm sorry, I missed the timeline. Were you still taking classes at Berkeley at this point, or is this right after?
This is right after. So I basically applied for the internship for right after I
So
graduated.
the summer of 06.
Correct. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first project I did was an internet radio station for Aerosmith, in Flash, which for the non-technical people, that was not exactly the most user-friendly thing to develop in. It was a matter of like I had a vision of what I wanted it to be. And on the days I wasn't working, I was just Googling and figuring out how to actually make what I wanted a reality and delivered the product on time. And then the next thing was a print advertisement, which I'd never really done print work properly. And designed it, looked good. We got the publication back in the magazine, and the logo is missing.
Wow.
Just because the print design is incredibly complex and confusing, and even though it showed up in my program and showed up in the printed version I printed out in the office, stuff like that, their software didn't read it correctly, and so we did this big print advertisement with no logo.
Oh,
So it wasn't exactly the best feeling in the world, but they rolled with it. They basically like, how do we set this up from not happening again? And kind of gave me the professional version of like, this is gonna be what your professional career is gonna be like. You're gonna be learning a lot. You're gonna make mistakes. It's less about how few mistakes you make. It's more about how quickly you learn from them, and don't make them again. So
right.
that was that. I did my first full website there and didn't tell them that was the first full website I did until after we launched it. Just project after project after project. It was, trial by fire, which it was a really great experience because it taught me that's how I learn best. It's always great to read. It's always great to hear someone else speak or be motivated by any of those things. But people really learn in different ways, and I'm a throw myself into the deep end and figure out how to swim kind of person.
Very cool. Hey, just curious, was this a paid internship or unpaid?
It was a paid internship, but not a lot, like $10 an hour maybe or something,
Right.
which is fine. There were actually, I was one of maybe four or five interns, and the others were not paid. They were like free lunch and experience and that kind of stuff,
Okay.
or college credit or something. I forget how that actually worked out, but mine was paid because I was actually. They were more like working in the warehouse and like stuff that wasn't exactly important to the business, but yeah, mine was highly visible, so
Understood. Yeah, and it's you said you were learning a ton.
yeah.
So was that for the summer then?
Yeah, that was for the summer. Eventually, they kicked it up to 3 days a week, and then in the fall, they extended me a full-time position. Which is cool. That was
Yeah.
a great way to get into a real job, and
Do you
I
mind
liked it
sharing
there.
what they were paying you then as full time?
Yeah, so at the time, I think I started off at 36,000 a year.
Right. It was 2006 is probably equivalent to what low to mid 40s today.
Yeah, and from what I understood from a lot of people I talked to, entry level, that wasn't too bad of a salary. I think the scale of what a designer should be paid, even at the first outset of things, has gone up as I've learned more over the years. But based on the fact that I had no previous experience and stuff like that, I didn't feel like shortchanged or anything.
Yeah, and it was in the music industry too.
Right, exactly.
Cool. So, all right, what happened next?
So I worked there for maybe about a year longer than that. I forget the actual timeline, if it was a year or maybe 2 years, but yeah, so they ended up getting to a point where they had to lay almost everyone off.
Oh, cool.
And they wanted to keep the three founders and me, which was flattering. But at the time, I'd gotten pretty frustrated with the way they were running things and had kind of built up a possible business plan for starting a business that was very similar that did it better. And really wanted to go out and do that. And really cringeworthy story. I ended up telling them that, I was going to be leaving. It wasn't right for me, that kind of thing. And two of the people I worked with that were VPs of the company, the VP of marketing and VP of engineering, were going to be advising me on this next business that I was hoping to start. And I ended up emailing the business plan to one of their old work accounts that got forwarded to the CEO. So the whole business plan for what I wanted to do that was different from their company got emailed directly to the CEO, which was very awkward and not great. But I never ended up doing that business anyway. But yeah, that was, man, my heart sank the moment I realized what happened.
Oh no, yeah. It's like
So I left. I didn't really know what I was going to. At the time, I was convinced I was going to start that business, but it just didn't feel right yet. I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing, yeah, I was young.
So, I'm sorry, were you laid off officially, or?
I left.
Gotcha.
They wanted me to stick around, and it was up to me to say, no, it's not the right thing for me.
Okay.
They were basically like, so how do you feel about doing seven times the work and the same pay? And I was like, nope. They actually ended up building the team back up eventually and selling off to PreSonus. I don't know for how much, if it was worth that much of anything, but it was good. Whatever move they made at that time was right for them, and they ended up building it back up, which is cool.
Sure.
So then, my boss at the time was the VP of marketing at that job, and she ended up connecting me with a different company, probably a couple months after that, which is another startup company called MatchMind, not in the music space. It was a company that basically gave you a portable key for your preferences. So the best way to explain that is, if you spend a lot of time in Netflix rating the movies you've seen so that Netflix knows how to recommend movies that you'd like, that information doesn't go with you other places. So you spend a ton of time in Amazon rating movies, doesn't go to Netflix. You spend a ton of time in Netflix, doesn't go to Amazon, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just this helped them talk to each other, essentially.
Correct. Yeah, it basically took the information and put it relevant to you, and you had this. It was a data file at the time, which is way too clunky, but yeah, you had this thing that you would upload, and it would be your movie preferences, your music preferences, your blog preferences, that kind of stuff. And that would be kind of the key to customize the site for you.
Gotcha. Can pause for just a sec here,
Sure.
because, of course, you said you went into Berkeley, wanted to be a rock star. You thought music business was good. Your first job sounds like, right down the middle of a type of job a music business graduate's gonna do. And then, now you got this next job, right? You left the company, and then you got hooked up with this other job that was not a music job. Like, just were you okay with that? What was going through your mind at that point? Were you just like, holy crap, I need a job? Was it, was music no longer a priority? What was.
Yeah, I would say that, in all honesty, the music part of the first job wasn't a big factor to me. music, if it was going to work in music, I never wanted to work really for a music business company. Like, I never wanted to go to a label, or never really wanted to go into management or those kinds of things. If it was going to be music, I wanted to be playing music. It was cool that it was a music company, but I really gravitated towards it because of the design stuff. And what really led to that was over the years, I'd kind of realized where I achieved what's called flow. If you don't know what that is, it's basically...
Yeah, flow is just like where your mind is just totally focused on what you're doing. And...
Exactly. Yeah. So there's two scenarios where I've identified that I can reach that. One is recording music, for sure. Back in maybe 2003 or 4, I recorded a record by myself, doing all the instruments and production and stuff like that. Was fortunate enough to have an uncle who had like a really high-end studio that I could use, but would get there in the morning at 9 a.m. and the next thing I know it's 2 a.m. and I hadn't eaten yet. and so that was something that really stood out to me as like, wow, I really love doing this. The other is design. In high school, I worked with a friend of mine. I would do what were then called flash intros. So you'd go to a website and there's gonna be this little movie before you actually get to the website, which really annoyed everybody, but I thought they were cool. And I would design those for him, for his web business. And same thing. I'd start working on it. I get this vision and I like have this animation time to the music and all this other stuff like that. And next thing I know, it's like 5:30 in the morning. I have to go to school in another hour. and once I really embraced that, I was like, okay, design is something I really love doing. And I seem to be good at it and I enjoy it. So... Like, what else can you really ask for in a job? Like, I didn't want to punch the clock at some job I hated. I wanted to do something I loved. Sure. It was a little bit of, I needed money. I needed a job. It didn't hurt that I loved what I was doing. So.
Gotcha. Understood. So you'd already figured out you really liked this design stuff. It sounds like even before you left Berkeley.
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time, but when I started working at Nimbit and was doing this kind of work, when I thought back on it, I reflected on it, I was like, yeah, you know, this. I used to do this in high school. I used to just forget about the clock and just go through this stuff. When it's something I find interesting and I really want to sink my teeth into, and especially when I have like a vision of the final product I want to create, mm-hmm. Whether it's music or design, I just get sucked into it.
Gotcha. Just at that point, your priorities were, okay, let's find another design job.
Yeah. And like I said, I think at the time I was focused on starting a business and, I still couldn't even really tell you why that was such a focus of mine. Glory, you know, I have no idea. Like, I wanted to do something great. I wanted to be Zuckerberg essentially. and it took, you know, this opportunity presented itself from that, former boss. And, you know, I went to the interview kind of reluctantly. Like, I didn't want to give up on the possibility of starting the business. But I did it because it was practical. There was no reason not to take the interview, to talk to them, to see what the opportunity was and that kind of stuff. And eventually I thought it was a good fit and they were going to pay me well. And why not? I mean, essentially what it worked out, I started as a consultant for them and then they eventually brought me on full time as well. But
it was a substantial jump over your previous job.
Yeah, it essentially doubled my salary.
Nice.
Consulting-wise, they basically, I forget what the rate it was I gave them for consulting, maybe 45 or 50 an hour. And then they almost kind of kept that flat. Like, whenever they brought me into the full-time role, they were like, all right, we're going to pay you basically the same amount you were consulting for, but as a full-time employee.
And now you're not paying double social security and you're getting vacation days and all that other suite of benefits.
Exactly. It was a very nice thing for them to do.
Yeah, that's a great place to be a couple years after college.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it's not like it was just like they were handing out jobs. Like, I definitely proved myself in that contracting capacity. I was kind of a jack of all trades there. Like, I did same thing, all the marketing, design, print, postcards, posters, designs for booths at conferences, website, you know, all that kind of stuff. I was doing it all across the board. And I was the only real design resource they had. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so sounds like you're definitely, that put you on the path that led to where you are now, so you could go kind of quick through the rest. What were the next, what's the next step?
Yeah, so the most impactful part of my career was just after that. So the Matchminder had closed down due to the economic downturn of 2008, 2009, whatever it was. Yeah, 2008. It was one of those scenarios where you show up on Monday and they say, hey, everyone, like, we have to close down. You have 2 hours to clean out your desk. And it was really...
Actually, my wife's company tanked, but they gave everyone, like, 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, I don't... I'm not... I think we got some severance out of it, but, like, in terms of, like, just getting things cleared out and stuff like that, it was just, like, immediate... and it was really weird because the Friday before that, I went golfing with a coworker of mine after work, and they had sent some email out that was like, you know, company meeting on Monday. And we were like, wow, wouldn't it be weird if we were closing up shop? With no no one really thought that was going to happen, I don't think. But I don't know why we made that joke, but we did. And then Monday, we both kind of like looked each other while the meeting was happening, and we're like, oh, my God. So that happened, and again, I was kind of back in the scenario of like, oh, it's fine, I'll start my company. Like, this is, you know, the blessing in disguise kind of thing. As you can tell, I'm an eternal optimist. So really wasn't a bad thing. But that's where I ended up getting connected to Runkeeper, which I keep referencing, but it's a mobile application to track your outdoor fitness activities, primarily running, but
cool.
Does
was things. Connected with this like another former coworker.
So, yeah, so what happened was about a month or two after I left MatchMine, the CEO of Runkeeper reached out to me and said they were looking for someone to do the design. And he'd heard my name from 3 or 4 people in the same week. So he figured he'd reach out to me because it sounded like there were plenty of people, you know, giving him advice to talk to me.
That's the most enjoyable way to get a job, isn't it?
Yeah, my dad gives me a hard time because aside from selling my services now, I've never really had to apply for a job. Like I said, Nimbit came to find me at Berkeley. MatchMind I got connected to by my former boss. I got connected to Runkeeper by people who were passed my name along that I worked with at MatchMind, stuff like that. And really the lesson there for me was just do good work. Be enjoyable to work with, work your butt off, like basically have integrity, you know, show respect for other people. Like it's all about the work ethic and producing really good stuff, and the rest will fall in place, which oversimplifies it. But a lot of people worry about like, oh, am I going to the right school? Or am I taking the right classes? Or like all these like details that I'm not necessarily sure matter as much as just being a really good person and doing really good work and having other people kind of work for you.
Sure.
So that was impactful because at the time, I didn't really see too much into Runkeeper. I'm not a huge runner. Like, I'd been running, but I'm not, you know, an avid runner or any of those things.
Sure.
The attraction to that position was two things. One, it was a mobile application, which was just a new thing as of 6 months prior. Runkeeper was one of the first 200 apps in the App Store when it launched in 2008, and this was January of 2009. And two, there wasn't a lot of bureaucracy when it came to design. So in the previous companies, whenever I'd create something, it kind of had to be approved by three levels of people, all with their own different opinions about what looks good and what doesn't. And that got really frustrating as a designer. It's kind of like, you know, if you're writing a song or performing a song or something and like three other people have to approve your performance before you can actually do it, it's really frustrating.
Sure.
So this was a scenario where they're like, hey, we're like 4 people. None of us know anything about design. We're looking for someone to own it. Can you do it? And so I was like, yeah, sure. Like, sounds fun. Got paid in part cash and part equity. So equity is basically stock in the company. Did that kind of part-time. So officially it was part-time for the next 10 months, but really I was putting in full-time hours to it, more just because it was I got really excited and really passionate about it. There was one vacation I took to California, where I spent 3 days in my hotel room working on it instead of enjoying California, which tells you just how much I was into it. While I was part-timing, I actually took on a separate job, just because I had to pay the bills. And I talked to Jason, the CEO, and said, hey, like, I got to do something. I can't just part-time for 10 hours a week. And he was like, we'd love to bring you on, but it doesn't make business sense right now. So I got a full-time job in the meantime with the boss I had at MatchMine, who hired me into her company, Currency, which wasn't really that exciting. It was basically the same role I had at MatchMine at a different company. So definitely got my work done there and stuff like that, but it wasn't, you know, nights and weekends I was focused on Runkeeper.
Sure.
The moment Jason at Runkeeper said, hey, we can bring you on full time now, I gave my notice at Currency the next day, was off the races there. And, I say that's impactful because that really gave me the most exposure into a startup company. So, startup companies, as I know it now, a lot of people are focused on, you know, equity and getting in on the ground floor and, you know, ownership of stock and that kind of stuff. At none of those first three companies, I really owned any stock. I didn't get any equity in any of those companies because I didn't even know about it, didn't care to research it, it wasn't really a factor. I think I had the option to earn stock at Currency, but I wasn't there long enough to actually get it.
Sure.
And so the Runkeeper was my first, like, secondhand experience to a startup, I'll say. I was the fourth employee there officially, was with them for about 6 or 7 years. And, you know, the team was 4 when I started. It ended up at around 60 when I left. The user base was 50,000 users when I started. It ended up being around, 50 million or 60 million today.
And you did get equity.
And I did get equity.
Sounds like, yep, you got equity in the right one.
I got equity in the right one, and especially because it doesn't matter how big it grows, it can still be worth nothing. But Runkeeper got acquired earlier last year by ASICS. So they got acquired for $85 million, and that obviously made my stock worth money. So that was beneficial because these other companies I worked for, either they got what's called acqui-hired, which basically means some company paid enough to pay off their debts and that kind of thing and acquire the people. But no one who owned stock really got paid that much. Or they weren't worth anything, or MatchMine, you know, got closed up and anyone who had stock, it was worth nothing. So
sure.
That happens way more than an actual successful exit. You know, my grandfather, being the conservative person, was like, are you investing in your 401k and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nope, I invested in this company, Runkeeper, and that's going to be my 401k. So luckily
you.
I was able to come back and say, see, it all worked out.
Right, so it sounds like you were there until you left to start your own work independently.
Yeah, so 6 or 7 years. I forget what the math is. End of 2014, so I guess 6 years. Mm-hmm. It was a great ride. I was, again, the sole design resource for the first 3 years. Eventually started building out a team, which was a new thing for me. That's where I first started to learn about all these different nuanced roles inside of design, because it was always just always me. Hired a bunch of really great people. And the line I gave them was, I'm pretty good at a lot of things, but I'm not great at any one of these things. So I need you to be great at one of these things, so that, you know, you can do the great work and all these things. So eventually it got to a point where I'd done my time. I mean, in the startup world, when you say you work somewhere for 6 years, people are like, wow, that's a long time. and, you know, for our parents, it's like, no, you find a career that you do for your life. So 4 years is not a long time. 6 years is not a long time to them, but that's kind of where things are headed. I don't know. I just got to a point where I didn't. It's not that I wasn't learning anything. It's that I wasn't learning the right things. Like I said, I'm a learn by doer. So, I just wanted to be learning other things that weren't pertinent to my day job at Runkeeper. So, I actually left Runkeeper to build a app idea that I had, which I did actually end up building, although I never released it. but it was really just a way for me to throw myself in the deep end of learning more about how to write code or how to hook up some analytics and read those kinds of things, manage the project myself, manage developers, that kind of stuff, which was very useful. But along the way, that's actually what morphed into the Brilliant product that I referenced earlier. It's just that the Brilliant product is the paid version for companies as opposed to the free version for a regular person.
Sure.
Like I said, along the way, I consulted mostly to pay the bills. When I left Runkeeper, I actually had something lined up where I was going to be a contractor for somebody. I was going to be a contractor for a contracting company. It was a friend of mine's company, but the day I was going to get my notice at Runkeeper, he was like, hey, so we're being acquired by one of our clients and we can't take on any new people. So, you know, this can't happen. He's like, on the bright side though, we have, one of our clients we have to let go, obviously. And he's looking for a design. You might be perfect for it. And so I gave my notice the following Monday at Runkeeper and ended up getting that contract with Cybex, which is the company, on Tuesday. So wasn't without.
Yeah, that's a pretty short period of unemployment there.
Yeah, but it was, I did get my notice on Monday without a guaranteed outcome. I basically said to my wife, I'm like, it's time. Like, I was nervous about leaving without something lined up, but I was like, I know it's time. And I've got a month and a half or so of runway before we really need to start worrying. And I guarantee you I'll find something. And thank God for my supportive wife. She was fine with it. She believed that I was going to find it. And then the next day I found it. So.
Very good. I'm sorry, was that work as a contractor then?
Yes, it was work as a contractor. So they definitely weren't looking for someone full time. But that was the contract that basically just, it was, you know, a constant contract thing, which made it real easy. And that was my first experience really in contracting at that level. And like I said, I thought I'd hate it, but it was weirdly freeing and it worked out great.
Right. You're just like, this contracting thing is really sweet. Let's just keep this rolling.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I mean, earlier, you can't turn down the money. It's funny, most of my jobs, I've doubled the salary every time, which is not the typical path. So any people listening don't think that's going to be a guaranteed thing. But yeah, and I got to Runkeeper and I was the VP of UX, which is awesome, and got paid really well, more than I ever thought I'd ever be paid. And I was like, there's no way that it could be really that much better, right? And then I started contracting and I was like, oh, okay, it can be better. So, I mean, the other flip side of that, in addition to having a lot of administrative stuff on your side of the table, that work isn't for everybody. I think I'm fortunate in the fact that I like doing that kind of work. A lot of people find it really frustrating. And so the money isn't really a great trade-off.
If you don't like it, you're saying.
Right. Because as a contractor or a consultant, you're basically just there to do the work. You know, you are... I saw myself as obviously being paid for my expertise and I'd give my perspective on what should be done and how it should be done and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's their call. So if they want to do something completely different, you're being paid to do it, whatever they want.
Sure.
And a lot of people can get, it's hard to invest in companies where you don't feel like you have a say. To some people I know for sure, they've done the consulting thing and they're like, never again. I will take the full-time job, you know, 10 times out of 10. And I'm not that way. There are clients that are more frustrating than others for sure. But, in general, it's not something that I can't deal with. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, hey, let's move on to the third part of the interview.
Sure. Sorry, it's taking so long.
basically three parts. We're at number three. So my first question for you is, what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
Yes, good question. So, current relationship, I DJ. I found a love. Yeah, so it's basically the most efficient way to get my music fix. I found a love in making what are called mashups, which is kind of like oversimplifying. It's the vocals of one song over the music of a different song to create some new version of the song. Because of that love, I ended up getting connected with a group called Booty Mashups. They're a worldwide mashup group that puts on kind of events in all different cities. So there's, you know, Booty Boston, Booty New York, Booty San Francisco, that kind of stuff. And I'm one of the resident DJs at Booty Boston, which performs every other month, the last Friday of the month. And it's kind of a group of three or four DJs that just kind of take turns doing mashups. It's kind of my outlet, you know, in addition to having that be the club outlet of, you know, I'm a 33-year-old guy and not really the biggest club goer in the world, but I get to go to a club and get paid to be there for, you know, once every 2 months, which is not something I'll complain about. Also making the mashups is a lot of fun too. I kind of sit around and kind of play around with it and stuff like that. I have been getting into electronic music producing a little bit more lately, but I'm still really green in that area. That's one of the things I'll do it in my deliberate practice time every once in a while. Yeah, that's my outlet. I think a couple of years ago, I was intent on starting a band again. I actually did, I had a live band karaoke band, which is basically karaoke where the band actually plays behind you instead of you're singing along to just a track.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and it was called Live Band Karaoke with Tom Boats Everybody, which Tom Boats Everybody is my kind of stage name, I guess. it was at the Lansdowne, down on Lansdowne Street, and it was an awesome time. I would love to keep doing that, but it was a lot of work, and
You'd have to have such a large repertoire, I imagine.
Yeah, so we started off with maybe 30 songs. And I treated it like a product. Like anytime people signed up for a song that we didn't have, I would just write that down and add that to the repertoire for next week. And we tried to add like 5 songs every week and just build it up based off of interest. So if 3 people put a song down that we didn't have and I had to turn them away, next week we knew that song. But it was that whole process of like bringing the sheets and all the gear and scheduling rehearsal time and making sure if someone couldn't show up, I had subs and stuff like that. It was a lot of effort for something that was a hobby. And I just had to be realistic about what I needed to focus on, which was my work. So that went by the wayside.
Sure.
That's why I say DJing is the more efficient way. I can just like show up on my laptop and do it. And not that hard.
Sure. All right, next question for you.
Sure.
Is, of course, Berklee gives that 1 degree, a bachelor's in music. And as you say, you're really into design. That's really what gives you that flow state. You're doing very well for yourself there. But thinking back to your Berklee education, is there anything where you feel like that Berklee in particular did well to prepare you for what you're doing now, as opposed to if you'd gone somewhere else?
Tough to say, because I didn't go somewhere else, so I don't know about those experiences. I have a love-hate relationship with my Berklee experience. So I do appreciate that I got the paper. I appreciate the structure of the school. There were some classes that I really learned a lot from and some that I really didn't. And I really can't knock Berklee too much because that's where I met my wife. So, if I didn't go to Berklee, I wouldn't have met her. So thank you, Berklee. I think one of the things that I loved and hated was the kind of self-guided situation when I was there. I don't know if it's still like that, but, I remember my first, my first semester, you know, when you get to Berklee, you kind of test it into your classes. And it got to Christmas break and I was hanging out with my dad and he's like, so what class are you taking next semester? And I was like, I don't know yet. And he was like, what do you mean you don't know yet? And I was like, well, we haven't like tested into them yet. And he was like, I don't think that's how it works. And because I didn't live on campus, or really pay, you know, I wasn't really that invested in school in the first place. I didn't realize there was a whole registration period and you had to like pick classes and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awkward.
So, yeah, I came back like right before the semester and I like met up with the guidance counselors and was just like, I don't have any classes. Like, get me to these classes. And, you know, after that point, I obviously knew I had to register, but even still, like, I might have missed the registration date or something. But the self-guided part was frustrating for me at the time, mostly because, like, no one told me. Like, it was like you were just thrown into the deep end. But ultimately, as I said before, that's kind of where I am best now. And I do attribute Berkeley as an experience that was like, oh, hey, you're not just going to be handed these things. Like, you have to be in charge of making sure you're getting the most out of your classes or moving these things or, you know, that kind of stuff. And that kind of self-directed part of it was very useful. It's just I learned that the hard way, I guess.
Okay. Fair answer. Well, hey.
So.
I don't know if you're going to have the same thing to say or I got something different. You know, we'll turn that question around. And, you know, again, you went to Berkeley, you know, knowing it was a music college and gave that Bachelor of Music degree. But with that in mind, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, hey, you know, it would have been really useful to have learned this when I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything you feel is missing from your education, or that they could have done a whole lot better?
You know, it's hard to say because I don't really see Berkeley. Like, if I knew I was going to be a product designer, I wouldn't go to Berkeley. And it's kind of hard to general, like, have some general thing that Berkeley could have taught me. Nothing really comes to mind. I mean, one of the most useful things I've learned in my professional career is the desire to just learn. And I'm not necessarily sure Berkeley helped me with that. I'm not sure any of my schooling helped me with that. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a general cop-out statement, I guess. But
about one person in six is just kind of stumped by that question.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, my interpretation of, like I said, some of the Berkeley classes were super valuable and really informational, and I really wanted to go every week.
Any particular ones come to mind?
So there a couple classes with, I don't know if he's still there, his name was Marty Dennehy.
He retired a few years ago.
Yeah, so he was an awesome teacher. He taught basically our Intro to Entrepreneurship class. Where we learned all about, you know, the paperwork you had to file and the final project was actually, you know, starting a company in a fake way, that kind of stuff. I found that really interesting, not even just because of the topic, but because of his teaching style and, you know, kind of the tangents he'd take about like different personality types and all these kind of interesting things that I found really interesting. There were other ones, I don't even know the name of the class, but I pretty much didn't have to show up ever, and the final project I did was like a storyboard for a music video or something where I just drew stick figures into squares and I got an A, and it really wasn't that useful. It didn't really make me want to like learn anything. It was just this like, hey, I can do this and get an A, it's fine. Real life isn't really like that, at least in my experience. You don't just like check off the box and get your paycheck and that kind of thing. And that is a typical millennial kind of thing to think. But not necessarily for their fault. That's just kind of a way a lot of them have been raised. But the desire to like the entrepreneurship class made me want to learn more, made me Google some things or maybe pick up a book or something like that. It was more about the desire to learn on my own that was useful than just, you know, whatever the content was in the class, if that makes sense.
Sure, totally. All right. Well, hey, again, you took us through your whole path here. It seems like you found your footing amazingly quickly with each job, kind of the next logical progression from the last to what you're doing now.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're aware that not every Berkeley graduate finds that their footing immediately.
For sure.
And there also are, let's say, people in their last year at Berkeley staring out into the big scary world and going, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
Yes. So, while I understand the constraints of obviously needing to make money and, you know, maybe even live in the city of Boston, which is not cheap, I would say yes to anything that seems interesting. So people often get in their own way, in my opinion, of listing off all the different reasons not to do something or the constraints not to do something or those kinds of things. And those constraints can usually be more easily overcome than people realize. I kind of attribute my path to good fortune, you know, karma, I guess I would say, but also to the ability to say yes. There were, at the time when I took that internship 2 days a week, I did have a serving job at Dick's Last Resort, so there was income. But shortly thereafter, I actually had to quit that job, and all I was doing was making $10 an hour 2 days a week at this internship. And I think that allowed me the other time to research the projects I was working on there and kind of get forward and stuff like that. And if it wasn't for me kind of taking that leap, I'm not really sure where I'd be right now. And I think especially when you're younger, it's worth trying things, because you really might never know how much you enjoy something until you do it. And that could include being a bank teller or being an insurance, like who the heck knows. But if it sounds interesting, find a way to say yes to it.
Very nice. Sure. And now let's sort of focus in a little bit, because I think you're my 61st interview.
Nice.
And, you know, you're going to go up there. I think you're one of two people I have as a product designer.
Nice.
And, you know, as you can imagine, very few people are going to listen to all 61 interviews one after the next.
Yep.
So presumably the people who are listening to this are the ones who are saying, oh, product designer, that looks interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's that all about? So for anyone who, like, hears your story and hears you describe what your job's about, and it's like, man, that sounds really cool, I'd love to get into this, do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, so if you've listened to the whole story of mine, there clearly doesn't have to be a schooling background to get into it, so don't be afraid to jump in. Assuming it's Berkeley students that are listening to this, the one key differentiator to keep in mind is that product design is a science and not an art. A lot of graphic designers come into it with this mentality of whatever they create is like an extension of them. And that tends to be the wrong mentality in product design. So you want to create something and get feedback from the person who's going to be using it about whether or not it's right or not. And if they say it's not, then you do something else. And if that's, you take the scientific method. You create something, you test it, validate it. If it works, great. If not, revisit it, that kind of thing. And so it's just a mentality to keep in mind going forward with it. There are decent number of books that will help you get there. But if you really feel like you want some experience or a leg up, there are, especially in Boston, there are some kind of, I guess I'd say, higher education things you can take that are specific to design. So a company called General Assembly offers a UX designer track that's, I think, 8 weeks or something, where you kind of just go through, it's a crash course on how to do product design. Same thing with Startup Institute, which is also in Boston. They offer a UX class that kind of gives you the primer for what you need to know. Sorry. Give you a primer for what you need to know to be a product design professional.
But UX is like user experience, is that right?
Yes, sorry. User experience is what UX stands for. So those are two companies that offer courses in how to do it. But really, I mean, there's no hard and fast rules about like you need X number of hours doing it or you need X number of experience. If you find the right place and have the right drive and the right desire to learn as you go and solve problems, there are places that will be happy to take a chance on someone who's young and unproven. You probably won't get the pay of the experienced professional, but
well, you didn't get the pay of the experienced professional when you started either.
Exactly, and that's the point. You know, if you're willing to understand the trade-offs and not make too much trade-offs in the pay because there's still value you're creating, but if you're willing to find that opportunity and have someone take a chance on you, those opportunities are out there. You just have to prove yourself.
Very good. All right, well, I just have one last question for you.
Sure.
Which is, you have the mic, and you're being recorded. So, is there anything else you'd like to say? I think we're best.
Let's see. Not really. I think if you're listening to this, you are already showing a drive to kind of learn and put yourself in the best position. The most important thing in my professional career and the most important thing that stands out among anyone I've hired or any of those things is passion to do good things, regardless of what the skill set is. Things can be, you know, things like design, development, marketing, whatever can be learned. But being a good person, someone you want to work with, someone who's helpful and kind and respectful to other people and humble, knows that they don't know everything yet, that kind of stuff go a long way in a professional career, even if you don't know the technical things about what you're doing. And I'd say my career is a testament to that. So, yeah, just be a good person and other people will be good to you.
That's really great advice. That applies in many fields beyond product design.
Agreed.
Yes. So, all right, well, hey, I really enjoyed this conversation. I really enjoyed hearing your story here.
Yeah, me too.
Appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
All right, look for a message from me in the near future.
All right, sounds good.
Good luck.
All right, have a good day.
Bye.